Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
And Mr. Mee will probably remember years ago our discussing the charter provides for the mayor to chair the meetings of City Council, whatever you want to call those meetings, whether you call it a work session or anything else. The charter, which is our constitution, actually gives accountability and responsibility to the mayor as your parliamentarian and as your chair. Mm-hmm. And so I would ask for the council's support in allowing me to fulfill that leadership role that previous mayors have been allowed to fulfill without such complicated ordinances.
Okay, I know this is not the most dramatic soap opera-y kind of element that you've ever heard me play for Days of Our Milton, but trust me, in the five-hour meeting from the other day... This is like the prologue, okay? The prologue is that there's been this long conversation in Milton for years of how to run the meeting and who gets time to speak and when do they get time to speak and how much time do they get to speak and who's going to chair the meeting. Because the shortest possible version of this is a long time ago, Heather Lindsay, who is now the mayor, was the a city attorney. And then she got let go, okay? And Alex Andrade became the city attorney and she ran and became the mayor. And in my opinion, she has resented not being the attorney for the whole time. And that's part of the reason that she and Alex do not get along, and they really don't get along. But that's part of the issue. And so she still views herself in her head as like the city attorney. I mean, she was actually one of the assistant city attorneys in the city of Pensacola until they let her go fairly recently last year. And so this issue of who's going to chair the meetings, in the charter it says that you're going to have one meeting a month, the city council meeting, where you take voting action on items, and the mayor is supposed to chair that meeting. She has a tiebreaker vote only because there's 8 city council members. There are other meetings that they have also had throughout the years, executive sessions, work sessions, different kinds of things, what you might think of as agenda reviews or whatever. And because of the disagreements and personalities and all of the bickering that made Days of Our Milton in its inception over the years, they removed her from the meetings. And they put a guy, Casey Powell, is one of the city council members who just got reelected without opposition, and they put him in charge of the non-city council meeting, like the non-voting meeting, and they left her by the charter in charge of the meeting. And she's trying to take back that power. She's trying to take back the ability to chair the meetings.
Ordinance from 2013, for example, is very straightforward. And it worked just fine for years. However, because of the division on this council and the personality conflicts, whatever you want to call it, especially beginning in 2021, there was quite a lot of discussion behind the scenes about how to make certain people happy by changing how I am to fulfill this role as mayor, which the charter provides for me to do.
Yeah, because she and Jeff Snow and pick your person, there were other examples as well, but there was a lot of contentious fighting on the meeting, on the non-city council meetings. And there was this whole business of who was out of decorum and who was lecturing. She was lecturing them all the time. And it was ugly and annoying and frustrating. And so they put Casey Powell as the chair in charge, and it really worked much better. Like, this worked. Well, now that she's got power again, because the 4 people who she had opposed, the Pitchfork Posse had opposed in Milton, all got deelected, and their replacements got in. Now she has on her side basically a 6-vote majority on the city council most of the time, and she's trying to undo all of that and get back in the position of power to chair the meetings. Part of the question is how many meetings are they going to have? They've gotten it down to 2 instead of 3, which is, from my perspective, really nice. Also from staff's perspective, and Ed Spears, the city manager, with whom she also has some conflict, mostly simmering, but you'll hear it in the tone of some of these clips. And he says, "We the staff doesn't want to go back to 3 meetings a month."
And just from the administration perspective, you know, the ordinance as it is currently adopted is the law of the land, and we'll comply with that. I can tell you there was a very quick, immediate negative reaction from the staff on the possibility of adding a meeting back to their nighttime activities. although if that's the direction council wishes to go, we certainly will make that happen. But there is a cost involved both in comp time and sometimes in real overtime by having certain staff appear at those meetings.
Yeah, because making all the staff be at these long meetings is costly to them in terms of time. You have to give them off time elsewhere to compensate them or pay them. And so the staff doesn't want to do it that way. And I mean, they will if they have to. The city council decides. But he's trying to say, hey, this is a bad idea. And here's where you'll start to hear some of this, like, nice on the surface, but resentment underneath kind of stuff. Because once upon a time, Mayor Lindsay chaired all the meetings, set all the agendas. She doesn't do either of those. She does just the city council meeting and doesn't set the agenda. The city administrator does. And also used to be in on the staff meetings, which also became a problem. And now she's not in on the staff meetings. Here's what she says about the three meetings a month.
I appreciate what you're saying, Mr. Spears. Thanks for the feedback from staff. In the past, when I was able to attend meetings with staff, I could get that feedback directly from the city manager and senior staff. So I wasn't aware of that.
You know, when you used to let me in the meetings, I knew this and I didn't have to find out in this public setting, right?
However many meetings you have, I believe the charter directs that I'm accountable for those meetings. So that means that I would be the one who assists you in getting your business done, which would mean that I would be the one who would work with staff on creating the agendas.
So now she wants to not just run the meetings, all of them, chair the meetings. She wants to set the agendas for all of the meetings, another kind of power reacquisition or whatever. Ed Spears says, I don't know, setting the agenda is really easy. If somebody asks for it to be on the agenda, it gets to be on the agenda. There's, you know, whatever.
Just to state publicly what we've discussed privately, and that is that whatever any past administration has done, there's no restriction for you or any member of this council to talk to any member of this staff. You have full access to discuss any topic on the agenda, any future topic, any ideas with any member of this staff.
Yeah, there's no restrictions, Mayor.
Now, I'd appreciate knowing about that, and my staff will inform me, but there are no prohibitions from accessing and engaging with our staff.
And that wasn't what I was implying. I wasn't implying the contrary to that, sir.
You know, sometimes when people are polite, they're like overly polite, and you know why they're overly polite? Because they're super angry. Now, I don't know. I've met Mayor Lindsay, you know, when she came here to do a tour with Leadership Santa Rosa, she was super sweet and kind, and I think, you know, maybe so, but I'll tell you, having watched these meetings over time, you know, I hear the things based on the history that I've observed, and you decide for yourself whether I'm accurately or fairly characterizing this. So then we're back to the issue of the picking of the agenda. Why do I need to set the agenda? Well, to take the pressure off you, dear Ed, who she tried to get not hired as a city manager, you may remember, when he was the assistant and Randy Jorgensen tried to make him the next in line. And then Scott Collins was the one that they hired. And, you know, and now it is Ed after Scott and the whole explosion around that.
I was trying to get to, Mr. Spears, is that you may feel the pressure from eight members of council to put every single thing that they're interested in on an agenda. And you're being fair to every member of council if you were to do that. One of the things that I can do as the chair, which any chair of any organization would do, is to help prioritize, make agendas more efficient. And then if council says, well, I don't really think that the way you prioritize things was correct, Mayor, we should have added this item, then that's when the council is amending the agenda. And so it takes the pressure off you to make everyone happy. And it gives me a chance to fulfill what I believe is my role under the charter.
I mean, you're doing a great job, Ed, but I think I can probably help you do it where you don't feel so much pressure. You know, you don't feel so much coercion. Maybe we can do it a little bit more efficiently. You know, maybe I have a better way of doing it. Because, you know, it's really normal for the chair to set the agenda. And it is. She's right about that. But all of this sounds very much to me like, mother, give me the power. Okay, John, you've only heard like the first 10 clips. Am I jumping too far, or are you hearing it?
No, I'm hearing
okay,
it.
Okay, all right. So
you're good, bro.
Back to just double check, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just one guy watching these meetings trying to figure out what's really going on despite what everybody's saying.
That's not something that you and I have done yet, and I'm not saying that to criticize you. I'm just identifying that that's an opportunity for us to create more efficient agendas. If that's what this council wants done.
Not that there's anything wrong with the efficiency of the agenda right now, Ed. You're doing a perfectly fine job, Ed. And you're obviously not, you know, bowing to any of the pressure from city council, Ed, but here I am to help all these problems that don't exist make them better.
I appreciate that and respect that, Mayor. I don't feel any pressure. If a council member asks for something to be placed on the agenda, it's very simple. It goes on the agenda because that's the council member's prerogative.
And that's exactly right. If a council member, all the council members are equal, if they want something on the agenda, it goes on the agenda. There's no real reason to have the mayor in charge of censoring, organizing, picking, selecting, deselecting, pushing around. It is normal. But you can also do it the way they're doing it, where you have the city manager doing it. It's just, you know, there's all different ways of running meetings, and it's a question of why does she want this power so much?
If a council member asks for something to be on the agenda, it's pretty straightforward. We put it on the agenda.
I respect what you're saying, too, sir. And again, I'm just trying to let the council know that I have been a chair of an organization before, for example, the Escambia Santa Rosa Bar Association. And I was the president of that organization for a period of time. And I was responsible for those agendas. The chair of an organization has a responsibility to give you efficient agendas so that you are not here for 5 hours. If you want to be here for 5 hours, that's your call. But I am trying to offer to you an opportunity to have more efficiency. And that's why I'm saying if you will allow me and direct staff to work with me so that this happens, we can give you agendas that are a little bit easier to chew on.
So give me the power. So that was like kind of one part of it is whether she's going to set the agenda. How many meetings? She kind of got told no on that. Part of this has to do with the fact that her view of the charter as far as running the meetings is that she gets to run all the meetings. And the city council actually passed an ordinance that said that was not the case, that she didn't get to run like the work session and the executive session, I think they call it, used to call it. And now they're thinking about reversing that. And actually the proposal was to put her back in charge of the meetings because the council is much more on her side now, 6-2 and maybe 7-1, depending on the issue. And so it's weird that they're having this discussion about whether she should or shouldn't be in charge of all the meetings. And she's actually said, I thought that the original removal of me from the meetings should have been done by a referendum because it was amending the charter. And she's going to now get into a kind of a bickering match with Eric Mead, who is the other city attorney sitting in. He's a partner in the law firm that Alex Andrade represents. Alex was not at this meeting, and Eric Mead is basically going to tell her that she's wrong in her interpretation of the charter. Again, keep in mind, she's a lawyer and she was the city attorney for a while.
Charter does say that the mayor must preside at city council meetings proper. It doesn't speak directly to other meetings. That would at least provide a working presumption. The mayor probably would preside at any other meetings unless the council feels differently about it. For a period of time, that was the case. Whether it remains the case is entirely up to the council.
So what he's saying is, yes, mayor, you are entitled by charter to preside over the actual official voting city council meeting. But other meetings are not specified in charter, and the other meetings, therefore, are not within the assignment of who's supposed to chair them. Yeah, sure. I mean, it makes sense. Normally, you know, it would be the same person, but it doesn't have to be, and they don't have to do a referendum to change that because having extra meetings is also not in the charter.
The question of agendas, there is also a working presumption that the presiding officer, who is in control and of the orderly nature of the meeting, will propose the initial agenda.
Right, right. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, it can be. It's certainly normal to do it that way. Here's where things got a little weird, and I know this is all like preamble. This is all like the prologue, okay? Because trust me, the later on when they talk about, you know, the lawsuit, no, that's the fun stuff. Fun in a horribly painful, bizarre way. But Mayor Lindsay, who again for a while was one of the assistant city attorneys in the city of Pensacola.
In the city of Pensacola, there's an agenda review where they don't actually debate the items; they just call them out one by one. And it's just basically to make sure everyone knows what's going to be on the agenda so that they can make sure they have a chance to ask staff questions. But that happens like a week before, so it's not the same day as the meeting.
Yeah, it's true. It's in advance. It's weird, though, because it's not a week before. It's, 3 days before? Because Thursday city council, Monday is the agenda review. I don't know why she thought it was a week before. She was one of the assistant city attorneys in Pensacola. I'm not sure why she didn't get that schedule right. But yeah, 3 days before. I actually like that system. It's the same that Santa Rosa does. Monday, they do the committee review on Monday and then the regular meeting on Thursday. That gives staff time. That means like in Escambia County, they do the agenda review when they do one. such a bizarre collage of approaches in Escambia County. But the county commission has a morning agenda review and an afternoon meeting, evening meeting. That's not enough time, and it's too much meetings on a Thursday. The Monday-Thursday model is actually a really, I think, kind of an ideal. I also don't get why in Pensacola they won't discuss the issue on a Monday. They should. That's a silly rule. They don't have to have that rule, but they do. Anyway, so back to Heather just saying, look, Mayor Lindsay saying, it's my job to do this stuff, and fine, if you want to have a different view of the charter than I do, I guess you're the attorney and I'm not.
Right. And again, my point to Councilwoman Farrow and affirming you, Mr. Mead, is it really doesn't matter how I interpret my duties because I'm not the city attorney. You are. I just know what I think my responsibility is, and I've asked council to support me in performing my responsibilities that I believe I have. That's it. That's all I'm trying to say.
But he was explaining you don't have those responsibilities because the charter only outlines one meeting, and in that meeting you're the chair, and you are the chair. And the weird thing is, Casey Powell explains, he's a city council member, the one who ran unopposed, he says, we're actually trying to give her back the power over this meeting. Why is this so hard?
I just wanted to clarify, the charter only establishes one meeting per month. That's what the charter says. And the mayor has never not been the one presiding that one meeting per month, which is the council meeting. Any other meeting, I think there's been open for interpretation. And what Councilman Leek is suggesting tonight is to make sure that all meetings are chaired by the mayor.
Right.
That's what he's saying. So whether you interpret it one way or the other, I think if you agree the mayor should preside at all meetings, then that's being accomplished.
But as is often the case in Milton, we took an awfully long time to solve this very simple thing because of personalities and who thinks they should be entitled to which form of power. And, you know, usually the smaller the fiefdom, the larger the turf war. So that's not even Act One. That really is your prologue to Days of Our Milton. And John, how often have you heard me say this? Trust me, what comes next is far better. And does it pay off?
Oh, yes, it does.
All right. Oh, and the what comes next in this case is all the years we've been doing Days of Our Milton, this is genuinely amazing stuff. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, can you blow up some balloons for Jack's party?
I can't. I'm so congested.
You need Sinex Saline from Vicks.
Sinex Saline Nasal Spray?
Yeah, just Sinex. Breathe.
Sinex Saline instantly clears everyday congestion associated with colds and year-round allergies with a gentle, ultra-fine mist that's no mess and easy to control.
Daddy, we need more balloons!
On it!
Enjoy life's important moments without congestion. Try Sinex Saline from Vicks. Just Sinex. Breathe. Use as directed.
Join Dawn and Dr. Brugiard from Ashtu Novant Health 65 Plus today at 10 o'clock on the Pensacola Expert Panel, where they'll be discussing the importance of annual visits with the Ashtu Novant Health 65 Plus care model. Tune in to call or text your questions at 850-437-1620.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Saturdays, you get a Garden Line Encore at 9, At Home with Gary Sullivan at 10, Swan Capital at 1, Let's Go Pensacola at 4.
Shut up, and definitely shut up.
But I didn't even say anything.
I know, but I enjoy saying it to you.
Lover!
Good morning, 529 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Chilly again this morning, not quite as chilly, but in the same vicinity as yesterday, so it's definitely not shorts weather, not yet. In the newsroom, we've got Steve Taylor with our headlines. Steve?
Well, good morning. The Transportation Safety Board of Canada is leading that investigation into the plane crash at the Toronto airport yesterday that left 18 injured. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board is also sending a team of U.S. investigators to assist. That plane was arriving from Minneapolis when it flipped over and caught fire. It had 80 people on board, and 18 were taken to hospitals with various injuries.
Did you see the picture of the plane?
Oh yeah.
And then they did a graphic of what they think happened, and it's just landing, and then it kind of tips and catches, clips a wing, rips a wing off, and flips over because of wind gusts. Like, oh my God, thank God nobody got killed. It's amazing.
It is amazing. That plane landed upside down, people hanging there in their seats from their seatbelts. Few
Put
injuries.
Put your seatbelt on, man.
Yep, that's for sure. Basically, that's what's happening.
All right, Steve, thanks for the update. Yeah, on fire, upside down on fire in Toronto, and nobody winds up dying, which is the best news of all of this. John, you've seen this as an aviator.
Yes.
And some news just came out. One of the passengers said that they hit really hard.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking when they hit that hard, then they went sideways and then boom.
And my first thought was, how does a plane get upside down? Because of the wings, right? But,
right.
Well, if you rip a wing off, then the other side catches and flips over. And, you know, or if it's getting sideways at all, I mean, thank goodness. Thank goodness everybody's alive.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Talks to end Russia's war in Ukraine are happening in Saudi Arabia without Ukrainian involvement for now.
In that meeting, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and Special Envoy to the Middle East Steve Witkoff. Rubio's Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov is part of the Kremlin's delegation. Saudi's foreign minister and National Security Advisor are also in that gathering.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Arrested in Maryland, the leader and two members of a cult-like group called the Zizians suspected of being connected to several murders.
Although the group's been linked to the murder of Border Patrol agent David Chris Milland near the Canadian border in Vermont, they say these arrests are unrelated to his killing. The group has also been tied into five other homicides in Vermont, Pennsylvania, and California.
Fox's Gary Baumgarten. Victims include the parents of one of the people arrested. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31, 38 degrees right now and clear. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Two 13-year-olds and a 16-year-old were seriously injured during a crash last Friday while the fourth teenager was driving. According to the Florida Highway Patrol crash report, the vehicle the four teenagers were in rolled over on Softly Pine Road. A 16-year-old boy was driving east on Softly Road while the vehicle allegedly suffered a mechanical failure of some kind. The report said the boy could not control the vehicle, which caused it to leave the road, collide with a Florida Power & Light junction box, and then roll over. A 13-year-old girl and boy, as well as a 16-year-old boy passenger, were taken to Sacred Heart Hospital for serious injuries that were non-life-threatening. The driver was given a ticket for careless driving, having no motor vehicle insurance, and a learner's permit violation. That's according to the report. We were learning some more about that incident in Fort Walton Beach, where a 41-year-old Gregory Simons allegedly pointed a gun at people and threw an explosive device last Saturday. That device damaged a Fort Walton Beach sandwich shop and injured one employee. Investigators say members of the Pagan Motorcycle Club were in the parking lot when Simons pointed a gun at them wearing an Outlaws Motorcycle Club jacket and then drove off, throwing an explosive device out the window. Anthony Karasik told Channel 3 the device landed near the drive-thru.
Thought it was somebody's muffler blowing because I've heard that sound, it sound like that before. But seeing a cloud of smoke like that, I was like, no, that was a little too bad. But I turn around and I look at the window and I see it like all webbed up and falling. And I'm looking outside and I also and see a cloud of smoke just coming up on me. What just happened?
The Pagans and the Outlaws are considered part of the Big Four outlaw motorcycle gangs or clubs. Investigators say this is the first in a long time since violence has sparked between the two motorcycle clubs in Okaloosa County. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives found semi-automatic and another gun in the vehicle, as well as four M-type explosives. Excitement is building for the 2025 Pensacola Mardi Gras season. Local officials are preparing to provide details on safety measures to ensure a smooth and enjoyable event for for all. At the mayor's weekly press conference later today, Mayor D.C. Reeves and the Pensacola Police Department will outline the city's security plans for all the festivities. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing a beautiful and mostly sunny sky day today with temperatures near 62 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 48. As you go into Wednesday, showers will move in. Heavy rain through the morning hours, 90% chance of rain. High on Wednesday near 58 degrees. Temperatures dropping Wednesday night near 32 degrees. On Thursday, sunny skies with a high near 49 and a low near 28. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now, 38 degrees in Pensacola, 42 in Gulf Breeze, and 36 in Milton at 535. The next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
The following message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Elder Affairs, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Sarah is 64 and loves to garden. Recently, her health insurance ran out, leaving her worried about more than just weeds. She called the Elder Helpline and spoke with a volunteer Shine counselor about her options. There, she received free, unbiased counseling on health insurance for those on Medicare. For more information or to volunteer, call 1-800-963-5337 or go to floridashine.org.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
Are you looking for the best news and talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 536 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. And, yeah, actually, this theme song is a perfect fit for a couple of the stories that we talked to Sheriff Bob Johnson about yesterday. Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson. I had a chance, like I said, to talk to him as we always do on a Monday. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So a couple of incidents took place last week. I guess, is it Friday? Your officers were making a traffic stop, maybe in Gulf Breeze, that became something a whole lot more, right?
Yeah, they were doing a traffic stop, and there were two individuals from Pensacola in there, what we commonly refer to as dirtbags. They wouldn't comply with instructions from the officers. A fight broke out. Multiple backup units got there. Three police officers got injured. One of the suspects ended up with a broken orbital bone and several dog bites, and it took about four guys to get them in custody. But some of the officers suffered things like broken noses and you know, different injuries.
Good Lord, how many officers were injured?
I think three total were injured, and then both the suspects were injured as well.
And the dogs are okay. The canine units are okay.
Canine's fine.
Okay. So what, like, did they have outstanding warrants? Did they just misbehave they were trying to get what happened?
Yeah, the driver, I believe, had a outstanding warrant from Escambia County Sheriff's Office for firing a weapon into an occupied dwelling.
Okay.
The other guy didn't have a warrant, though. He was just, I believe, it was the nephew of the suspect, and they just started throwing down, which happens, you know, when you pull over cars. You never know who's behind the wheel. They could have just killed somebody and think you know about it, even though you're pulling them over for a tag light out or something.
In those kind of situations, I guess I'm glad nobody got killed. No suspects got, you know, I mean, didn't, no tasers, I guess, were deployed, but just, you know, a wrestling match, which is part of the, I mean, unfortunately, that's part of the job, right? It often leads to officer injuries.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, unfortunately, it happens more times than most people would expect. especially in Santa Rosa County. You don't hear about it a lot, but, you know, we have a lot of bad people that, you know, go through our county, not necessarily living here, but they, you know, go through it, and we have to deal with them.
And it's a, you know, a reminder of something we've said, you know, hundreds of times on this show that, you know, one of the most the two most unknown incidents that you guys ever get called to is domestics and domestic disturbances and traffic stops, right?
Yeah. Those are ones with the highest injury rates for cops by far.
Because something and all kinds of crazy things can happen. Well, terrible. Yeah. The other incident was also a traffic stop, though, with Justin Dale Peacock. You did a press conference on this last week, right?
Yeah, it was. So he was pulled over for excessive speed, and I watched the body cam video. He got out, and you could tell he was pretty ticked off from the get-go and just refused to obey any officer commands. It escalated. Finally, got him at gunpoint. He's just not listening. He's screaming at the officer, and the officer's basically trying to get him on the ground. Backup's coming, but of course, sometimes that takes 2 to 3 minutes. And then he says, get on the ground. And the guy goes back toward his car. He says, do not get in that vehicle. Do not reach in the vehicle. And he reaches in the vehicle toward the seat, like toward under the seat. And the officer fires, hits him in the leg. And that doesn't stop him. He comes back out after he's shot in the leg. He comes out of the car. They still screaming at the officer and then takes off toward Holly by the Sea and goes probably about 300 yards before other officers get there. And they all finally get him on the ground and get him handcuffed.
That's crazy. And what people might wonder is, okay, so what's the justification of shooting somebody who's not displaying a firearm?
Right.
And I know what the answer is, but I want to hear you say it because it's important for them to realize how they can get themselves shot by failure to comply during a traffic stop.
Yeah, yeah. And basically what it is this. When you're pulled over, you're detained. You don't have the freedom to leave. You don't have the freedom to resist the officer unless the officer is doing something totally, you know, take your clothes off, something stupid like that, obviously. But you have to remember also, everything's on body cam now. Everything's recorded. So when you're not complying, he's going to use whatever force he needs to get you to comply with his instructions. And if you are acting like this guy was acting, which the body cam, once FDLE finishes their investigation, we'll release the body cam footage, obviously. But when you're acting like this guy and you say, don't reach in that car, and he's screaming at you and he reaches like toward the seat, you don't want him to access a firearm. He's obviously not going to listen to you. He's obviously in a highly agitated, possibly drug-induced state, and he reaches like toward the underside of the seat. It's all, you know, fun and games are over.
Right.
And the officer shot him in the leg because that was the only exposed part, and he came out of the car, and the rest is history. But yeah, you don't have to show a firearm. If you make a furtive movement and you're standing there and the officer's saying, don't move your hands, and you reach inside your jacket and pull something out, we're not going to wait for you to point a gun. I mean, even if it's a cell phone or whatever, you're ignoring our commands. You have to listen to us by law. And if you don't, then it's on you. It's not on the officer.
You know, you actually answered the other question I had about this, which was, you know, sometimes I know critics will say things like, well, why don't you go to shoot somebody in the leg? Why'd you have to shoot him in the chest? And of course, the answer is, well, in a situation, it can be very hard to target a leg. It's a very easy thing to miss, even at fairly close range. That's why we shoot for center mass to stop, because if you're drawing and shooting, you're shooting to kill. I mean, that is the point. Yeah. But you answered it. The reason he shot in the leg wasn't because he missed the chest. It's because that's all he had to shoot at. Right.
Exactly. And I'll tell you this, too, Andrew. A lot of people say, well, wait for him to pull the gun out. Well, then you're reacting. And, you know, he knows if he's got a gun and he wants to shoot and kill a cop, he knows what he's going to do. We, on the other hand, have no idea what he's going to do.
Right.
We don't know. And all we know is he's not complying with what we're telling him. And there's a reason for that. Now, we don't know the reason. It could be he has a dead body in the trunk. He just killed his mom, and we don't know why he's not compliant. He does, but we do not. So we're at the disadvantage. And I tell all my guys and gals out there on the street, you go home at night. That's the main purpose right there. That's the main thing.
you go home at night. And unfortunately, you have people like this that disobey commands. And I personally, he was on something. That's my personal opinion. And once the video comes out and everybody gets to see it, I'm sure they will agree.
I did want to ask you, I'm not sure I understand the story entirely, but you tell me. There's about $1 million or $1.2 million in opioid settlement money that is coming either to or through the sheriff for opioid prevention abatement. What's this all about?
Yeah, we get a portion of it. I don't think we get the entire $1.2 million.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, it's to combat opioid overdoses. And we've gotten money like this in the past. And basically, we've spent it on everything from Narcan to those machines that identify drugs without having to touch them, shoots a laser through it, you know. We get to spend it on any kind of thing that basically will assist us in combating narcotics abuse.
Very good. Well, I'm sure that'll help quite a bit. I did have one other thing that I wanted to ask you about. It didn't happen in Santa Rosa County, but it's been on my mind because we had a story here in Escambia where over the weekend a teenager riding an electric bicycle going south in the northbound bike lanes on Highway 29 actually ran into a car that was pulling out and had pretty serious injuries. Luckily, this person was wearing a helmet, the rider. I have seen so many of these electric bikes in all kinds of situations, riding the wrong way, not just electric bikes, regular bikes, riding the wrong way in these bike lanes, but also just in general. Half the time, I don't know what to do with them. They feel like a motor vehicle because they're zipping around at 30 or 35 miles an hour, sometimes in the lane itself, you know, like all of those things I'm dealing with. And I'm just curious, from a law enforcement perspective and a safety perspective, what are you seeing with the electric bicycles particularly, and is it a concern for you?
Yeah, I think it's a concern for all motorists because, you know, the problem you have with the electric bikes is, as you said, they're fast. They're doing 30, 35 miles an hour with no noise. It's not like a motorcycle where you hear that coming. At least, you know, you turn your head to look where the sound's coming from. These things don't make a sound. They're extremely fast. And if you're riding it the wrong direction, and I know a lot of people will say, bike riders will say, well, I don't want my back to traffic. Well, I'm sorry, that's the law, and there's a reason why you have to travel with traffic, and you have to obey stop signs, and you have to obey traffic lights on a bicycle, is because you will get killed if you don't. So this guy riding the opposite way, I don't know the whole case, but yeah, if you're riding northbound and southbound traffic, that's the problem you have. People pulling out, not seeing you because they're not looking that way.
Right, you're going the wrong way. I mean, on a one way street basically. So,
yeah.
But I just didn't know if you had a thought about whether they need different regulation, more regulation. To me, they're scary. And it feels like we suddenly have this problem. I mean, I'm all for people being able to get around, especially in a way that's, you know, very cheap. But it seems like they are a source of chaos, and that's going to lead to people getting injured. And I just didn't know if there needs to be a different way to regulate them than we currently have.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be against some kind of permitting for that. I wouldn't because, you know, if you're a 10-year-old kid and you're on a bicycle that can do 35 miles an hour,
yeah,
that's basically a motorcycle, just not quite as powerful. So I would be all for some kind of regulation age-wise and because, yeah, the younger you are on an electric bike like that, the more, you know, I mean, and I'm all for them having fun, but you don't want kids getting hurt. So
yeah, no,
I wouldn't be against any kind of regulations like that.
I mean, it sounds silly to say it, but it's a motor vehicle. Even if it's battery driven, it's definitely operating like a motor vehicle. And that means, you know, at least to the level of golf cart regulation, if not something higher.
Go ahead. It's a battery powered motor vehicle. So, yeah.
Sheriff Bob Johnson, Santa Rosa Sheriff Bob Johnson, as always, sir, thank you for the time. Thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
Absolutely. 5:48 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Raise your glass at the inaugural Wine on the Water Grand Tasting Saturday, March 22nd at Blue Wahoo Stadium. Fine wine, craft beer, yippee, and I mean, I like good wine. I love a good beer. And gourmet bites from Pensacola's top chefs and set against a stunning backdrop, Pensacola Bay. Don't miss live entertainment, croquet and rosé, that's cute, tournament. The trick is how to operate the croquet mallet and hold your wine at the same time. And breathtaking sailing views. Get your tickets now for Wine on the Water. Also, Sean of the South, who's always good stuff, is coming to the Sanger Theater. That's going to be the 27th, Thursday the 27th at 7:30, Sanger Theater. 100th anniversary event featuring Sean of the South, Sean Dietrich, the columnist, humorous, musician, storyteller. He's featured in all of the magazines. You know him. So get your tickets now for that event again coming up on February 27th. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. When you buy a Subaru, you're buying more than a vehicle. You're buying an investment that holds its value and something that will last a long, long time. In fact, according to Experian Automotive, 96% of Subaru Crosstrek and Forester vehicles sold in the last 10 years are still on the road today. And during the Subaru Lot to Love event, you can get 2.9 for 48 months on 2024 Crosstrek models. Or get 1.9% APR financing for 72 months on 2024 Forester Wilderness models. No matter which one you choose, both come standard with symmetrical all-wheel drive for confidence on the road ahead. Love begins with trust, and you're going to love the trustworthy Crosstrek and Forester Wilderness from Anderson Subaru. Highway 29, just north of Car City. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Longevity based on Experian Automotive vehicles in operation versus total new registrations for model year 2014 through 2023 as of December 2023.
Hey, Escambia. Today, ECUA is talking trash.
Specifically, bulk waste.
July 1st, 2023, bulk service changed to call for pickup. Schedule a pickup by calling the ECUA customer service department anytime before 2 p.m. on the day prior to your normal pickup day. Bulk pickup is still included at no additional charge. Schedule a free bulk waste or special pickup for construction debris for an additional fee. Call customer service at 850-476-0480. More information at ecua.fl.gov.
Know what to throw, 850.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. Costello's has all your barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu tomahawks, Wagyu chuck steaks, to quarter pound colossal Wagyu hot dogs, briskets, pork butts, and so much more. At Costello's, you'll find all the best boarhead sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready from charcuterie boards to chicken salad and the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop, Deli, Fine Wine, and Cheeses. Find them today on the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
Join the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10:30 as Bess Marks from Lazy Boy joins the show, talking about upcoming events at all three Gulf Coast locations, Pensacola, Spanish Fort, and Mobile, how to incorporate Lazy Boy's free in-home design service with recliners, sofas, accessories, and artwork to make your home look just like a picture out of a magazine.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Contracts that DOGE found across our government. This is a DEI contract, $36,000 for U.S. citizenship and immigration services. That is against the president's policies and his America First agenda. This is a $3.4 million contract, a Council for Inclusive Innovation at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, Department of Commerce, another DEI contract that DOGE identified. I can continue to go through these. Oh, I love this one. $57,000 for climate change in Sri Lanka. What is this doing to continue the interests of the American people? Absolutely nothing.
Okay, agreed. They're ridiculous. But there's a difference between something being contrary to the president's new guidance on DEI or inclusivity or any of that kind of stuff, and being fraud, waste, and abuse. And also, there's a significance question. You know, if we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars or cutting $1 trillion from the federal deficit every year, talking about a $36,000 DEI citizenship initiative is not catching my attention, right? It's tiny, tiny drops of water in an ocean of waste. And so I thought the question that was asked by the reporter, again, the reporters don't always ask good questions, but in this case, I actually did ask the right question. How significant is this?
All those things you just mentioned, fraud, or are they waste, or are they just contrary to the president's policies?
I would argue that all of these things are fraudulent, they are wasteful, and they are an abuse of the American taxpayer's dollar. This is not what the government should be spending money on. It's contrary to the president's priorities and agenda. And again, we can continue to provide you the receipts for all of the fraud, waste, and abuse. And if anybody in here wants to argue that the federal government is not fraudulent in some capacity, be my guest, because I think the American people watching at home would beg to differ.
That is what we call a straw man argument in logic. And if you've taken a logic course, you may have heard that. Caroline Leavitt is erring again here, E-R-R, not A-I-R. She, first of all, didn't answer the fair question, which is, okay, those are things that are contrary to the president's priorities, but that's not the same as fraud or abuse. And she says it's waste. Yeah, but it's waste because it's contrary to the president's view. And in terms of significance against the overall size of numbers we're talking about, they aren't very significant. They're eye-catching because they're obvious examples of DEI and whatnot, but they're not statistically significant examples. I mean, when you're cutting $36,000 as an expenditure, you're cutting slower than the interest is on the debt. And like, it's, you're not even playing the game, right? You've got to be cutting hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars to really be making a dent. And again, I think DOGE is doing that. What was the thing yesterday that they found? I don't want to get the number right, but it was $4 trillion in untraceable funds that had been going out because they hadn't been putting anything on the "what is this for" line. And so you couldn't trace it because it didn't have, like, good Lord. You know, this is the basic accounting controls that Elon Musk is talking about. The other part of that answer by her is saying, and if anybody wants to challenge us that there's no fraud in government, we're not saying there's none. Nobody believes that. That's an idiotic position to argue anybody's advocating for. That's why it's a straw man. The question is, if anybody wants to argue that there's not massive, or that it's mostly fraud or corruption as opposed to contrary to the president's, you know, this is not a good answer for her. This is not a good logical look for her. But, you know, look, second press conference, you know, we'll see where things go. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Steve Taylor's in the newsroom with our headlines. Steve?
Well, good morning. The top official at the Social Security Administration is stepping down after a disagreement with the Department of Government Efficiency. Michelle King resigned after refusing a request from DOGE to access sensitive government records at that agency. The information reportedly dealt with Americans' bank info, Social Security numbers, marital status, and date of birth. Nearly 300 Federal Aviation Administration employees have been fired by the Trump administration. Those employees got their notices over the weekend in a move the union calls a hastily made decision. In an agency already challenged by understaffing, the workers affected include mechanics, aviation safety assistants, and others. Well, the chances of an asteroid hitting Earth in 2032 are going up. A new estimate from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory says the asteroid, which is called 2024 YR4, has a 2.6% chance of hitting Earth. That's up from a 2.3% chance last week. And NASA says near-Earth asteroid measures, well, this one measures about 300 feet across and has a very small chance of hitting Earth on December 22nd, 2032. But that said, the probability of hitting Earth has been increasing since that asteroid was discovered a couple of weeks ago. In late January, the chance of hitting Earth was only 1.2%. So keep your eye on the sky.
So about a 60% increase of an incredibly small chance of a very small asteroid hitting us.
Yes,
cool.
Yes.
All right, got it.
Not to worry.
Thank you so much, Steve. 5:57 News Radio 92.3. Oh, speaking of like actually finding significant and statistical things, have you seen some of these numbers they're putting out about people who are getting Social Security? It's
crazy.
The running joke is apparently we've got vampires in America, because there are people who are over 150 years old who are getting Social Security checks.
I know.
And you know, it's not a lot of them. What is it, about 1,000 or something like
right.
that? But the total number of people who are registered for Social Security is over 400 million. Quick pop quiz. How many people live in the United States of America? It's about 330 million. So
well, let's do the math.
A little over, you know, little surplusage. Okay, here's my dream. Okay, here's my dream. I want this government to lay waste to the fraud and waste. I also want this government to expose all the ridiculousness and fix it. I also want it to tell the truth and not exaggerate. I am not going to get all my wishes. I am hoping to get A and B. I feel pretty lucky if I get A, B, and C, or even some slice of C&D, but I don't think I'm going to. And I will keep talking about it because it matters. All of these things matter. They are all reasonable things to expect of a government. And, you know, I'm watching a government do what I think are amazing things and sometimes not good amazing things, but many genuinely amazing things. 437-1612. Oh, this is kind of interesting. You know, we haven't played a Who Filed It much this year because, God, there's been so much other stuff to do. But as the session starts to get towards we're having session, these bills are getting filed. One of the bills that's been filed and has the support of the Agriculture Commissioner, Wilton Simpson, likely a hefty odds-on contender for to get the governorship in 2 years, is to prohibit fluoride in water supplies in the state of Florida. You've had several municipalities do this. Of course, there's been a handful of citizen activists have been actively pressing all of our local governments, but also ECUA to do this. I actually think we should definitely talk about it and maybe vote on it and maybe just make the decision.
Listen on air.